Happy Monday, everybody. Dan Bickley, Jared Carlin. We've never done this. We have never sort of done a daily double kind of thing.
It's like a daily single.
What do you mean?
Where it's just you.
Well, but it's you too. It's like you're kind of the co-host today.
Yes. How's it been so far? Pretty good.
Not bad. If you'd like to just produce and not talk, we can do that too.
No, I liked it. I don't know what the audience prefers, but
it's even better right now. We're going to welcome in our great friend, the one, the only Dave Pasch, joining us right now. We're going to talk a lot of stuff with Dave. Hey, Dave, what's happening?
Hey, Vic, it's about time you guys class this show up by getting Vinny out of there and getting Jared in the chair.
Ah, we're talking.
classing it up, is that
well,
what you call it?
The last few letters, right?
Yeah, clown it up, probably.
Yeah, the last three letters is more, I think, more appropriate here. All right, let's talk a little bit about, before we get into specific topics, what we're all dealing with in sports right now. The NBA's got a bubble, and they're about to give it a shot. Major League Baseball seems like they're teetering on whether or not this is going to work. What lessons does the NFL need to be paying attention to right now so they can avoid some of this stuff, or maybe even, you know, kind of put their best foot forward?
It's really tricky, Dan. I have been very careful about everything I've said when asked questions about the future of sports. Is there going to be a season for football? What is the season going to look like? How is the bubble going to work in Orlando for the NBA? And the reason is because it just seems like everybody wants answers, and everything, every opinion that's given is analyzed to a great degree, and I have no idea. I really don't. I thought that, you know, there's a period of time there I was really optimistic, and then you have days where you're pessimistic. I think the NFL in particular will study, you know, how the NBA works in terms of testing and the bubble concept, although it's obviously very hard to have an NFL bubble. I just think right now, Dan, there's so much uncertainty and unknown. I know there's been discussion about, you know, the preseason. What's the preseason going to look like? Is there even going to be a preseason? If there is, how many games will it be? What is, you know, in terms of what's safest for the players up against the money that's involved in, you know, losing some of that revenue if you don't have preseason games? So I just think right now there's so much uncertainty, and I don't feel like we're going to have anything more certain in the coming weeks.
Right.
So a lot of it is going to be trial and error. Okay, can we make this work? What happens if we do this? What happens if we try this? And hopefully in the end we have, you know, a full season with no issues.
Would it be smart for the NFL in a situation like this? All right, okay, so you know you've got to have some level of trust with the Players Association if you're going to get these guys to take the field and play a very intimate, high-contact, violent game in a pandemic. So you're going to need them to sign off on this idea. Would it be wise for the NFL to be really overly sensitive to these concerns about, okay, we don't need to get together. We don't necessarily need to have 5 weeks of training camp. It'd be real hard for some football teams because they want their time, they want their structure, they want their routine. But do you think it'd be smart for the NFL and these clubs to kind of just let players win this moment right now and for the air of, on the side of safety?
I think the league has handled it really well so far, and I have, you know, I'm pretty confident they'll continue to handle it well. And the good news is, you know, for coaches that want their time with their players and all that, I mean, I think they're on high alert too, because, you know, their safety is on the line as well, and their family safety too. So I think everybody's in the same boat, I guess, is what I'm getting at. And if you don't have the time in person, or if you don't have the level of contact, obviously that's changed over the years also in terms of how many full padded practices you have and how much contact there is and live tackling and camp and all that. So everybody's in the same boat. However this shakes out, if we start on time and what the season looks like, at least everybody is in the exact same position, and you're only in it for 1 year. You got to find a way to get through this year.
Yeah, that's a good point. When you saw the hype video with Kyler Murray throwing the ball to his teammates in Dallas, how did you feel?
Excited. To see the transformation of the organization, you know, led by the drafting of Kyler Murray and how quickly it seemed to happen. And I know I'm taking quite a leap because we haven't seen, you know, the huge increase in wins. They obviously won more games last year than they did in the previous year with Josh Rosen at quarterback. But just the level of confidence and the excitement surrounding this kid, I think that's why, you know, I'm always excited going into a season, Dan, but I just feel like this year, you know, hoping that, you know, we're able to watch practice and, again, not sure what the season's going to look like, but
right.
just to see Kyler Murray going from year one to year two, I can't wait because I know the players around him believe in him. You know, there's a belief in Kyler Murray already. And, you know, with Carson, there was a belief because of what he had accomplished in his career. But I also think, too, it took some time for a lot of people to fans to buy in. I think everybody's bought into Kyler Murray, and it's happened pretty quickly.
That's a great point. I don't even know how to quantify this, but Jarrett and I agreed on this. Just watching Kyler Murray in that video, he just looked different. He looked more commanding, more in control of everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Confidence.
I mean, he was in. I go back to, you know, watching him day one of training camp last year where he's showing Larry Fitzgerald where to line up.
Yeah.
The offense, yeah. You know, he knew the offense better than anybody other than Cliff. So, I think there's great confidence in him in the organization, you know, from the top down. But the fact that the players are in, they're all in on this kid and they want to follow him. And I think he's grown and matured as a leader so much. I think that's the other thing that maybe, you know, that not every fan noticed, but, you know, he's undergone a transformation in terms of his maturity and leadership, too.
Back to the NFL in general, how much of what has changed in this weird offseason, whether it's, you know, the less practices, the lead up to the draft, eliminating preseason games, how much do you think that will change for the good long term? That the NFL will look and say, you know what, we don't have to do things this way. We don't have to have all these practices. We don't have to have a million private workouts. We don't have to have four preseason games. How much of that do you think will have a long-term effect?
It's a good question, Jared. It's really hard to answer at this point. I'm sure there will be things that the NFL looks at from this offseason and they say, you know, this worked out okay. We can do things this way going forward. But I also think there'll be some things that, you know, you just can't compensate for. You know, obviously you want to have as many interviews in person as you can. Zoom is great, but you know, you want to be able to shake a guy's hand, look him in the eye, be able to have him get on the grease board and show you what he can do, show you what he knows. So there will be some things I'm sure that the league teams will look back and say, you know, we were able to survive this way, but I still think there's so much of the way the league has done things for so long that they've done it that way for a good reason, and I'd be surprised if they changed.
All right, what do you think about everything that's swirling over the Washington Redskins right now?
I think we're in a period in our country, obviously, where it's incredibly divisive. So anything we can do to join together with fellow Americans, so if that means changing the name of the Washington Redskins, then they need to change it, and I think they will. I'd be shocked if they didn't, just based on everything that's been said by the team and the pressure around the team to change the name. I'd be surprised at this point if there wasn't a change.
Well, you know, and I look at this, and I look at some of the things that we have seen in college football from young college stars taking stands about things and how effective they've been. You wonder what players on the Washington Redskins would feel like if their team didn't do this. And by contrast, you look at the Cardinals that brought in a guy like DeAndre Hopkins, who's very socially active, very deeply convicted, very much his own person, a strong personality with great respect inside the game. You've got a head coach like Cliff Kingsbury who seems to understand the idea of partnering with his players. It seems to me like the Cardinals are in a good spot for what a professional franchise needs to stand for in this day and age.
Absolutely. I think the Cardinals have always been that way. You just look at the history in their hiring process. You know, there is a long tradition of equality within the Cardinals. You know, I go back to when, you know, Denny Green, at least my time here, and I know it goes way, you know, beyond that, but just from the time that I joined the organization in 2002 when Denny Green was head coach and Rod Graves was the GM. You hadn't seen that before. And so the opportunities that the Bidwell family have given to all people, it should be applauded. And that's why I think the Cardinals are, and they've always been positioned in a great way in that regard. And I think, at a time in our country where, again, there's so much division, the Cardinals can be an organization you can look at and say, they're doing things the right way. They're trying to unify, and that's what we need right now.
Yeah, I agree with that. No doubt about it. All right, for a guy who loves basketball, tell me what you think about the NBA's chances. What are you excited about?
There has been a lot of talk about, is there an asterisk on this season? I think there is, but I think in a good way. I think winning a championship this year is going to be harder than ever, just given the number of games you're going to have to play in a short amount of time. I know there's no travel involved, so, if it's a Bucks, Lakers, or Clippers finals, you don't have to spend, 4 or 5 days in Milwaukee if you're a team from L.A. and everybody's playing in Orlando. But just given the restrictions within the bubble and the fact that if a player tests positive in the middle of the championship round and can't play in a game, and you somehow can overcome that and win a big game in the finals, that's the unknown. And I think just living with the uncertainty makes this, maybe the toughest crown ever to get. So I think in a good way, there's going to be an asterisk on this season because it will be harder to win a championship than we've ever seen.
But do you think that means that we're actually going to see any upsets when the playoffs start?
Absolutely. I have no doubt that things have changed so much because, we're almost 4 months now removed from the last night of the regular season. And you're going to have an opportunity for these guys to tune up, to have some scrimmages, and then have some regular season games before you get into the playoffs. But, there are players that were playing in February and March that weren't healthy, that are healthy now. But then there's the unknown of, okay, who's in shape, who's out of shape, who took advantage of this time, who had the ability to practice and to continue to stay in shape and well-conditioned during this time, and who blew it? Who didn't take care of his body?
You're right.
Or who didn't, who didn't have the opportunity to work out? So I'm excited to see when everybody gets together what it looks like, and the teams that have a lot of experience and they're used to each other. I think the most intriguing team to me is the Clippers because I just felt like they were best positioned of all the teams to win a championship. But there were so many games played already where you didn't have Paul George and Kawhi Leonard together. Well, now no one's been together for 4 months. And then when they get down to Orlando, is there still going to be the need for both those guys to rest? Paul George had, the shoulder surgeries in the offseason. We know about Kawhi not wanting to play every game. So, how does that look in a truncated season down in Orlando for them?
All right. What does the broadcasting component mean to you in all of this? I know in talking to Wolf, he's dreading the idea of being part of an NFL broadcast crew where you're not on site being part of the energy. I'm sure you've got a lot of thoughts on this as well as it pertains to that and the NBA. What do you think that's going to be like?
For me, Dan, I feel like it's an easy answer, and I would assume most broadcasters would say the same thing. You want to be there. Not only do you want to be there, you want a full house. And at this point, obviously the NBA is going without fans. It's hard to say what the NFL season is going to look like or what college football is going to look like at this point, just given what's happened with some of the spikes recently. But as a broadcaster, you want to be on site. But at the same time, we just need to do what the medical experts are telling us and what the team or the leagues are comfortable with. So I think there's a lot of unknown. What is a booth going to look like in a football stadium? If you're calling a college football game for ESPN, is our booth going to be in the normal spot? Or if there's no fans, is the booth going to be, 10 rows up? I think down in Orlando, you're going to see a booth that's not right on the court. It's going to be removed. But is there social distancing with the announcers? Is there a glass pane between the announcers? I don't know. Are we doing games from the studio with a live feed? Is there travel involved? It's crazy that we're sitting here on July 6th and we still don't know, but I'm not sure we're going to know anytime soon what it's going to look like from a broadcast standpoint. So we just got to be flexible And whatever they tell us to do, whether we're on site or not on site, we just need to be ready to roll.
Well, as the sports renaissance man that you are, Dave, which sport would be the most difficult to do remotely, the broadcast?
I think football is the most difficult just because the number of players that are involved and the things that you see live that sometimes you can't see on a monitor. But you could also say that about basketball. You know, there's so much that you see live. You catch interaction between players off the ball or interaction between a coach and a player. There's just so much going on off the ball. You know, your focus as a broadcaster is on the ball, but I'm always looking between the court and the monitor, or in football, the field and the monitor. And there's stuff that you see that sometimes, you know, the camera doesn't catch. So you just have to do your best if you're not on site to be able to document the game the best way you can. But, you know, football, just because there's so many more components and so many more players, obviously that would be the most difficult to do just off a monitor.
This has got to be crazy for you, for a guy that has traveled and works as much as you have in the past, to have this kind of extended time of not doing it. I'm sure you're just tripping out from all of this, aren't you?
Well, it was, again, so weird. I mean, I know I've told this story in the past, but, you know, I was set on March 11th to do the Kings-Pelicans game. And, you know, we come up out of our meeting with Alvin Gentry and run into David Griffin, and he tells us, hey, the NBA just postponed the season after tonight, and this will be the last game. So we, Richard Jefferson and I, go out to rehearse our open, and we're all ready to call a game where we're talking about, hey, this could be the last NBA game for some time, given what's happened with Rudy Gobert testing positive for COVID-19. And Pat McGrath, who's a great statistician, he's done a bunch of Super Bowls and Final Fours, he was walking by the Pelicans locker room and heard someone telling the players to stay in the locker room. So he comes and tells us, hey, I'm not sure the Pelicans are coming out. And lo and behold, they don't come out. That game gets postponed because one of the officials working the game had worked a recent Utah game. So we don't even call the game. We go from, you know, a few minutes before tip-off being ready to go to getting back in the car and going back to the hotel. The next morning, I fly home. I've been here since. So it's surreal to think we're coming up on 4 months. And I'm usually off during the summer, but just being off in March and April was very strange. And, boy, I hope I'm not off in August and September. I hope I'm rolling and working hard.
No, brother, you and us both. Well, man.
You're going to have everything going at once in August and
September. Well, that's the hope. That's the hope. But the fear is we'll have nothing still. That's it. And nobody knows, Carlin.
Well, I mean, I've tried to stay optimistic during this whole thing. And again, I've just stayed away from trying to guess because I think everybody, it just hangs on every opinion that's given, and it just changes so quickly. It looked like we were in the clear for a while, and now who knows? So, but I think we all want and need sports back. Hopefully it's really, really soon.
Yeah, you're so right about that. Dave, thank you so much for being generous with your time. We'll catch you down the road.
Anytime, fellas. Take care.
All right, buddy. Dave Pasch joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. A great person to talk to because his career and his vocation spans a lot of different sports.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to ask him
The thing is, and again, it's and you know how much I love Wolf. I really hope that they get to be on site because part of what Wolf makes him so great as a team broadcaster is he's part of the team. You know what I mean? And I fear that he's just going to feel disconnected if he's sitting in a studio in Phoenix, Arizona, trying to get amped up over it. Wolf needs to be walking back and forth from the broadcast booth to the coffee pot in the media lounge.
Absolutely.
And that's what he does. That's where he belongs.
It's also interesting how Dave said that, not just the being there, but being there with a loud, packed crowd can affect the broadcast.
Yeah. And listen, I was thinking about this in terms of the NBA. When you look at what this is going to be like, the NBA is going to be different because if the NBA can get elevation, if they can get started, what's going to happen is there's going to be a continuing process of elimination. You're going to have all these teams playing their 8 games, and then boom, right then and there, 6 teams or 4 teams will be gone immediately, maybe 6. If there's no play-in series, it could be just boom, now you got the playoffs. And then every week and a half to 2 weeks, you're going to have 50% reduction in who's there. As that number begins to dwindle, it's going to be fascinating to see what the psychological dynamics of that, of being the last teams standing in a place. Because this is not going to be, okay, we just played the series in Cleveland, now we're going to Atlanta. Neither one of those would happen. Both franchises are terrible. I don't know why I use them.
But it's almost like Survivor.
That's what it's going to be like.
A reality show where you keep voting people off until it's just the people going for the prize, the championship.
Yeah, and I heard Luke say this morning, and he's right about that. Then the teams that keep surviving are going to be even more committed to not letting anything from the outside take them down. It still might.
I almost wonder, like, they're going to get to the bubble. And they're going to just see what's going on in the rest of the country. And they're not going to want to leave the bubble. Just the opposite of like what we thought. Like they won't want to spend that much time there.
Right.
They're going to be like, oh, man, things are great here. We're safe here. We'd rather not leave. Added motivation.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to ask Dave, and I just remembered it, was when we were talking about the Redskins changing their name. And we've been talking about a lot of how the fans would react. Because he's a Syracuse alum, and Syracuse did change their name from the Orange Men to this, the Orange.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just going to say, like, did you care at all when that happened? Because...
Why didn't you think of that?
Well, I just thought of it.
Why didn't I think of that?
Well, none of us thought of it. Dave, call back in.
No.
No,
took 22 minutes of his time.
Yeah, I know. But it's because... And it wasn't like for a I don't think it was for a controversial reason. It was they wanted to be gender neutral and just be the orange, the color of the school and stuff. But it's interesting when, because there has been teams that have changed their names over the years. But in that very same city, we said, you know, the Bullets changed to the Wizards. And I just wonder fans of those teams if they really do care. So
yeah, no, listen,
maybe I'll text them and ask.
There you go. That's the way to find that information, right?
Yeah.
All right, coming up on the other side, we'll update you on Major League Baseball, what's going on there, and then I'm going to tell you about, is golf going to actually spawn the next star in American sports? Could it happen?
No.
We'll talk, or at least I'll talk about that next. You're listening to Arizona Sports 98.7 FM.
Two players that tested positive were Silvino Bracho and Junior Guerra. So I'll go ahead and give you that. And then we're still waiting on some other guys to get through the protocol. And look, this is what I want to say about this. I know that you guys want to know what's happening, and there's a lot of moving parts to this. This is not an easy situation for all of us to walk through. And, you know, I just ask that you guys don't dig into it and speculate. I know it's easy for all of us to do. Because, you know, with the web and you know, the connectivity to the person that's tested positive, there's a lot of protocols. So we're clearing these protocols based on the Major League guidelines. We're sharing with you the amount of number that that have tested positive. And at times I'd like to leave it right there. And when we can, we will tell you.
All right, that's Torrey Lovello, manager of the Diamondbacks, who was otherwise positively raving about what he saw from his players on the baseball field. I think he's clearly referring to David Peralta and Cole Calhoun, neither of whom have been there quite yet. So I think he's just asking people to be respectful of the protocol and not spend time speculating. So for the moment, I'm going to indulge the manager and not speculate.
All right, the moment's over. Let's go.
Right. The moment's over. No, I want to start with this, though, actually, because this got me kind of geeked up for baseball. This is just a factoid about the great Bob Gibson. Okay? All right? Now listen to this. In 1968, Bob Gibson had 34 starts. Okay? 28 complete games. Now, that in and of itself, if you just stop right there, you'd go, that's insane. All right. But I never knew this stat went along with that season of his in 1968. And his season in 68, to me, it's the greatest season a pitcher's ever had.
This is the season where the next year they lowered the mound.
This is the 1.12 ERA over the course of a full season. All right. The stat that came attached to that I never knew before today. Bob Gibson in that season, 28 complete games and 34 starts, he was pinch hit for the other six times. He was never once removed from the pitching mound. Never once did a manager go and take the ball from him.
That's crazy.
Because he was in trouble, or because he never once did the manager think, I've got a better option at this moment than that guy right there. That is staggering to me.
Bob Gibson, and obviously I never saw him play, but he's one of the most mythologized pitchers ever.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime anything comes up about somebody being disrespectful, somebody showing up a pitcher.
Yeah.
The example they always use is, Bob Gibson, he would have was pitching, he would have put one right
so
between
lucky
his
you
eyes.
Were, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like they always paint him as the most fearsome, fearless pitcher that ever was. And a lot of it is based on that one season, but a lot of it is like they almost use him as the example of a pitcher from yesteryear when the game was a true game, a true sport.
Right.
That was baseball.
Right.
Bob
when men
Gibson.
Were men.
Bob, it's a good name too. Bob Gibson on the mound. Yeah, the manliest men, Bob
right.
Gibson. But it is funny though, people, he had that one, I mean, he had a great career. But people don't consider him like the greatest pitcher of all time, but he might have had the greatest pitching season of all time.
That is absolutely right. Okay, so back to the Diamondbacks for a moment here. So what we're getting in Major League Baseball now, it's not exactly encouraging. Joey Gallo tested positive for COVID-19, slugger for the Texas Rangers. And then there was the comments from Chris Bryant, who basically said, because of the inconsistencies in Major League Baseball protocol, he doesn't exactly feel safe. Here's what he said. I'll read it to you. Quote, I don't want to be insensitive to people who haven't been able to get tests or have been in situations like that. But as the country gets access to more of those, I think it's appropriate to talk about our situation here. What we agreed to was testing every other day. We have had guys here who showed up on Sunday and hadn't gotten tested again until 7 days later. And then you don't get the results for 2 days either, so that's 9 days without knowing. I think if we really want this to succeed, we're going to have to figure that out. I wanted to play this year because I felt that I would be safe and I would feel comfortable. Honestly, I don't feel that way. Okay, this is why this whole thing in Major League Baseball, this is almost a cruel tease. Because...
Right.
They're back, they're practicing, they're playing, they're getting, Jarrett, over the weekend. Okay, so I'm on Coronado Island, social distancing from everybody but my family.
Sipping Mai Tais with Vince Morata.
It was actually an APA.
Oh,
the joke.
My favorite.
I looked across the bay, and there was Petco Park with the lights on. And it dawned on me, the Padres are practicing. That's why the lights are on. And I got so excited at that moment. I'm like, oh, my goodness. Baseball's back. It's proof. It's right there. The lights are on. This is going to happen. I don't know, man. I just don't know.
So when they first announced that they were returning, within like a few days, we had the players come out that said that they weren't going to play, that they were going to take off the seat. Since then, we've seen much higher profile players, Mike Trout, Buster Posey, now Chris Bryant, not say that they're going to play and not say that they're not going to play.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of the let's wait and see thing. Let's wait and see it. We're only a couple of weeks away from what's supposed to be the start of the season.
Right.
So I don't know what they're waiting to see.
Well, look, I think that it's really just they're waiting to see what numbers look like after guys get together and play baseball every day. And, you know, they're doing certain things that I think, I mean, cleaning baseballs, really? I didn't expect we'd be hearing about that. You know, Mike Trout running the bases with a mask on. I thought that was a real powerful visual for him to show just how concerned he is. Now, does he need to be wearing a mask while playing baseball if everyone around him is being tested and is COVID-free? No, but I think it's a way for him to show how serious this happens to be. And more you're seeing big-name players tapping out of this, you just wonder at what point Major League Baseball is going to go shut it down.
No, this will go back to whether you believe that Major League Baseball and the owners ever wanted to have this season happen to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they want the season to happen, the season is going to happen at this point. All the wheels are in motion. They have a plan. They have an agreement. Everything. So we're only a few weeks away. It's going to happen regardless. Even if they're playing with every backup on every team, they're going to play the games. If they never wanted to play the season to begin with, they might be looking for an excuse. And once a Mike Trout or Chris Bryant opts out, they might say, you know what? It's not fair. These teams are losing their biggest stars. Let's just regroup. We'll start next season on
totally
time.
Totally agree with you. And that would be that would make what's happening right now kind of cruel. You know what I mean? On the radio last night on this fine radio station, I was listening to Madison Bumgarner pitching in a World Series game. And I'm like, I want a live baseball game in the worst way.
Yeah. It's been weird because the first few months, we were just talking about the possibility of the return of all the sports. What's going to happen? What's it going to look like? Is it going to happen? We never thought that, okay, once they all agreed and came up with a plan, then we still have that 6-week, 8-week window before they actually start playing.
Yeah.
And that's what we've been in now where we're like, well, okay, they agreed. We're all excited. Let's go already. Let's start. I can't. It still is like the end of this entire month. We have to wait before anything to happen, and we still don't know if anything's going to happen.
We don't, and it's really precarious right now. And that's why I really like this phraseology that was used in this headline about baseball being stalked by a virus right now. They're in stadiums working out, but can they keep the virus out of those stadiums? And it's Joe Maddon came out and said, he's told his guys on the Angels, you have to be the best teammate you have ever been in your life right now. And this is just so, it's such a heavy ask after you've been through a labor battle and after you've taken pay cuts. This is such a heavy thing to ask players that the tapping out thing, it might just be a day away.
Players are still people. And when you look at...
They are?
Well, yeah. I mean, they're celebrities, so they're not really people, but you know what I mean.
That's what I thought your theory was.
But when you look at society and when you ask people to care about the other people and not just themselves, we see how that goes. So when you tell the players that aren't in the bubble, let's say, when you're saying Major League Baseball, you have to make sure that you follow all the rules because what you do will impact everybody else. Who knows if that's going to work?
Yeah, no, yeah, right. That's kind of the bottom line here. It's all moving. It's all in flux. This afternoon, Major League Baseball is expected to release its schedule. I was actually looking forward to that event. When you've got a 60-game schedule,
first time ever, right?
Yeah,
heard about that.
Yeah, 60-game season, it matters now. Mike Hazen even dropped clues late last week that they're opening up on the road. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to that. I hope that they get there. All right, coming up on the other side, we're going to tell you about the golfer who might break through. Yeah, believe it. Dan Bickley, Jared Carlin, Arizona Sports, 98.7 FM.
Bickley and Murata. Dan Bickley and Vince Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Go!
Welcome back. Dan Bickley, Jared Carlin, Vince Murata still on vacation. As we all plow through the month of July, over the weekend, a golf tournament happened. I was not particularly interested in it. Since the PGA Tour returned, they've had great fields. This was not one of their good fields. This was a dreadful field, and I pretty much tuned it out. But here is what happened. Bryson DeChambeau, the golfer who gained 20 pounds by drinking 6 protein shakes a day, adding all that muscle, he is overpowering golf courses. And as of this weekend,
and his toilet,
maybe,
yes,
possibly, and overpowering the field as well. And he won this tournament over the weekend, a tournament that included him blowing up at a cameraman that received a lot of criticism for him. And yet when I watched the highlights, there were a couple of things that blew my mind. Bryson DeChambeau hitting a golf ball off of a tee box has become a thing. If you like the long ball, if you like home runs, if you like power displays, if you like the home run derby in Major League Baseball, you'd like watching this guy golf because that is what he's doing off the tee box now. He, over the weekend, crushed a record that was held by Tiger Woods for the longest drive, average drive off of a tee box in a tournament that he went on to win. For Bryson DeChambeau, it was over 350 yards per drive. And there were some that went even more than that. But the thing is he is so big now, and the sound that he makes when he hits the ball is so uniquely his that it's becoming an event.
When the club hits the ball, you're talking about.
That's yeah, when the club hits the ball. Yeah. Right. It's becoming such an event that it's becoming a thing now on the PGA Tour. You watch the highlight reel of this now. There are people, everyone who's at that golf course now is following him just to watch him drive the golf ball. And it was, I began to wonder, this is a really interesting transformation that we're watching with this guy. Because last year, when he was just a guy who wore kind of the, you know, that, what's the name of that hat that he wears? What do they call that thing? Kind of like a Kangol.
Yeah.
It's not the same, but it's kind of like
a newspaper boy hat.
Right. He was just known as a weirdo. A guy that took way too long to golf. A guy that got way too into the nerd science of golf. And was good, but nobody really liked him, okay? What he's done now, he's kind of become a cartoon character.
I mean, he looks like the cartoon characters that fly over the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
Kind of.
Looks like he's
blown
up and big.
It's Hulk smash golf is
now,
what it is.
Now, you just sort of glossed over the controversy around him.
I was gonna dial back to, but go ahead, say what you want to say.
It wasn't just him yelling at the cameraman, but the interview afterwards that mm-hmm. he did, where he pretty much said, you know, why are they filming every one of my actions?
Right.
They don't need to show the stuff, you know, me swinging the club at the stand because it's not protecting my brand. Why are they showing the bad things that I do? They should be protecting the players.
Here's what happened. He was in a sand trap. He hit out of the sand trap. He wasn't happy with the shot. He swung violently in the sand. He looked up and he saw a cameraman filming him, and he went nuts on the guy. Why are you following me? Why are you filming every move of mine? Blah, blah, blah. And people are like, oh, boy, really? Multimillionaire complaining that somebody's filming his every swing on a golf tournament? Yeah. There's a backstory to that, Jared, and if you're interested, I'll tell you what it is. At the 2018 British Open, he was, after the first round had completed, he went back to the driving range with his team. Okay, this is after his first round was completed in the Open Championship. He goes back to the driving range for some more additional practice, and he's completely tormented by his own failures or whatever else. And you can see him melting down. He's melting down in front. There's nobody else around him but his team. And he's melting down to the point where he's ready to break clubs. He walks away from his handlers. He goes over. He puts his head up against a wall. He looks like he's having a mental breakdown. Golf Channel filmed it. And Golf Channel ran with it. And because Golf Channel did that, and they had every right, here's Bryson DeChambeau on a driving range after a round going nuts. They film it, they put it on, they talk about it. I think that incident that happened to him a couple years ago is why he melted down this time. It's really it's a stupid thing to say.
Well, he's really getting criticized for the, you know, they should protect our brand kind of thing.
Our brand, yeah.
And it sort of makes him seem like, I just want you to show the good things that I do, to praise me, to build me up. And when I do something stupid, don't show it. That's not your job, is to make me look bad,
right.
Even though it's him
right.
doing it. They're not like, it's not like they're manipulating the video or something.
Right. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. And so I think he's going to have to work that out. When I mentioned, could he become the rare mainstream golf star? He's such a freak show now when he hits the ball. I find it to be incredibly compelling. But there's also a lot of weirdness with that guy. So I don't know where this whole thing is going.
That could work to his favor,
maybe.
Though. Stuff that makes him different than the absolutely boring vanilla. Everybody since Tiger Woods that they've tried to make the next Tiger Woods
right.
has not been the next Tiger Woods for two reasons. One is they can't sustain winning,
mm-hmm.
whether it's, you know, Rory McIlroy or Spieth or whatever. But the other reason is there's nothing compelling about any of these people.
Nothing.
Other than that they're good golfers.
I agree with that.
If this guy's a little weird, even this guy's a little hot-headed, the fact that he looks different than almost every other golfer works to his favor. He has a weird name. People haven't really ever heard of him before. So even though he's been around, to a lot of people, this is the first time they're hearing of him. So it's a new, exciting golfer that's on the scene.
No, listen, and golfers, I've thought this for a long period of time. if golfers could pull a Judge Smales after a bad shot and just fling their club 300 yards and have it crash into a cafe, right?
Yeah.
People would love that. Yet they can't do that because it's golf. It's a gentleman's game. Yeah, I agree with you. If John McEnroe is proof that if you're a freak show like that, if you're petulant, if you're a brat, if people have no idea what you're going to say, they'll watch.
People loved Mike Tyson because he was a crazy person in the ring and out of the ring.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. So, and you are so right on the money when you say there's just nothing compelling about any of these guys, which is why when the PGA Tour, and I've got this on good authority, Jared Carlin, we talked for 3 days about Ian Poulter's epic flatulence.
Fantastic.
Right? Fantastic. He did that purposely as a clapback to the PGA Tour that's telling these guys, come on, give us something. Say something. Show us something. Show us some personality. Ian Poulter's response was, okay, you want something?
How's that? A personality for you.
That's exactly what it was. So so in that case, I agree with you. I think that if Bryson DeChambeau can just be down with the weirdness.
Like who? The second most pop. Maybe Phil Mickelson, but Phil Mickelson has some personality.
Uh-huh.
But other than him, the most popular, most known, most recognizable, most mainstream golfer of the last 25 years is John Daly.
Thank you. That's a right.
Not because, I mean, he had some success early on, but because he's so different than any other golfer.
John Daly would occasionally quit mid-round. He would just go, you know
he'd
what?
He'd smoke cigarettes during the round.
He'd hit his golf ball into the water, throw his putter in the water, and walk off the
tremendous.
Course. And people are like, oh, I got to get more of that.
Yeah.
And here's the last thing, though, about Bryson DeChambeau. He might get derailed here because I read a story that these golfers, all right, Jared, they've been so non-compliant to anything on the course. None of them. I was reading some stories. People who've been covering these golf tournaments say that there's very, very little care being taken on the course, that coaches, players, they're up close, they're sharing golf clubs, they're high-fiving, they're fist-bumping. There's a belief that the PGA Tour might eventually become too careless for their own good, that golf might end up going away. What a fail that would be.
Especially because, like, that was the one sport that we said could have just played through the entire pandemic.
Yeah.
Because of the way it's set up. Just real quick before we break, Adam Schefter, Chiefs and quarterback Patrick Mahomes have reached an agreement on a 10-year contract, an extension through 2031 with Kansas City.
Hold on a minute. 10 years?
10 years. He even put on
a 10-year. Is there a number? Is there a number next to that?
Don't have the number yet. But
because I'm guessing that number,
obviously.
That number is going to be, what, $400 million? What do you think?
How much guaranteed?
And hello, Arizona Cardinals. Welcome to your future.
Whoops.
Welcome to your future. All right, we got a lot to get together. We have a lot to get to in the second half. The Kelly Oubre stuff, Patrick Mahomes. But when we come back, yes, it's the Bickley Blast. You're listening to Arizona Sports 98.7 FM.